South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, film critic Dan Hudak presents his sage predictions for the upcoming Oscars. Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Miami-Dade arts calendar features Deborah Margol. Presenting thought-provoking contemporary theater and newly imagined classics, the Miami Theater Center in Miami Shores celebrates an anniversary this year. Here's Judith Bishop to tell us more.
The Miami Theater Center is celebrating its 10th anniversary, and for most of its run, it was known as the Playground Theater, presenting original and imaginative productions geared to children. But in recent years, the creative team just made a sharp U-turn and now offers unconventional drama and comedy appealing to a sophisticated adult audience. The company was founded by artistic director Stephanie Anson. She's a Miami native who studied, acted, and directed in both New York and Boston before returning home to her Miami roots. She's our guest today on South Florida Arts Beat. Stephanie, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. You have a very exciting new production opening soon, but first I had a question I wanted to ask. Why did you decide, you and your creative team, to make that sharp U-turn and transition from children's to adults theater?
What we did was we opened the umbrella. So we're still doing theater for young audiences, but we're also doing theater for mature audiences because we realized that we wanted to widen the range of artists we are working with as well as audiences we were attracting. Also, our audiences were growing up. You know, we've been around 10 years now, so there are kids who grew up coming to shows with their schools and then said, hey, it's my 18th birthday. I want to go to this edgy show in the Sandbox for my birthday. So we're still a destination for kids who grew up coming to our shows.
It's wise, I think, to diversify like that and to broaden the base. February 19th is going to be a big night at MTC. You will be previewing your edgy adaptation of the comedy The Seven-Year Itch, which is a 1950s play by George Axelrod that became a classic film starring none other than Marilyn Monroe. What factors led you to select this particular play, and why do you think it still resonates these decades later with audiences?
I'll answer in opposite order.
Okay.
I had this conversation with a good friend of mine when I was thinking about doing The Seven-Year Itch, and I wanted to know from her perspective, just raw person on the street, why is this story still relevant without any intellectual or artistic theories? And her answer was, because Miami is the adultery capital of the world.
Probably not something the tourist board is going to put on a bumper sticker. And you know what? Midlife crises never go out of style.
They don't. And loneliness doesn't go away, and restlessness and just the feeling that one needs to be loved and give love, that doesn't go away. It's universal. It's an old story that's just told in different ways at different times. My relationship with the play actually started in 2001, when I was in grad school. I directed this for my thesis for my MFA at Columbia University. So I've been sitting with this play for a long time. And the reason I wanted to do it again in our 10th anniversary season was I had become friends with Aaron Glickman, who's the publisher of Social Miami. And in his past life, he was an actor. And for about 4 years, he's been telling me he wants to get back on stage. He wants to do a show. And I knew that this was a really good role for him. And I'd been wanting to do the play again in a professional situation. So I said, you want a challenge? You want to get back on stage? Let's do this. And he said, okay. And it's huge. Yesterday, I told him this is like Mick Jagger doing a comeback world tour after 10 years on Ibiza.
It is a challenge. It really is. For those people who are not familiar with The Seven-Year Itch, can you give us a brief outline of the plot and the main character?
Sure. The main character is a publisher named Richard Sherman, and he lives in New York City. It's the early 1950s. And like many executives of the time, his wife has gone away for the summer with their child, and he's home working in the hot city alone in their apartment. So he's restless. He's supposed to be on a regime of not drinking, not smoking, behaving. But at the same time, it's his first time alone. So he's kind of enjoying the freedom. And before he can figure out what to do with himself, he meets a young woman who's subletting the apartment upstairs. And they start hanging out together. And the whole play takes place over 36 hours. And what's very different between the play and the movie is in the play, they do sleep together. In the movie, that was censored.
Too risque for the 1950s.
Yes. And George Axelrod, who wrote the play, said that he felt like that censorship ruined the movie because the source of the comedy is Richard's guilt. He feels guilty for what he's done, and that's funny. But in the movie, he never actually did it, so the guilt isn't as grounded.
It sounds like fun. Home Alone for philandering husbands.
Right.
Now, who gets the plum female role? I don't know who played it on Broadway. Can you tell us? And, of course, Marilyn did it.
Marilyn did in the movie, so she made it super famous. And at MTC, it's an actress we've worked with for 4 years named Diana Garley, who's 22, just like the character in the movie.
The film version had one of the iconic scenes of all time, I think, when the breeze from the subway grate blows up Marilyn's white dress well above her knees. It was scandalous at the time. Are you going to make reference to that? Do you have a wind machine waiting in the wings?
Well, our choreographer desperately wanted a wind machine. Unfortunately, we couldn't accommodate that because we couldn't open the floor and we couldn't hide it. But we are definitely aware of the audience's expectations of seeing Marilyn Monroe, seeing that dress, seeing that subway. And we are meeting that expectation in an unexpected way. Marilyn is present in the play. Diana Garley's character is not alluding to Marilyn. She's not trying to be Marilyn, but Marilyn is present. There is an homage to Marilyn in the production, and there is a thread of action that to me reflects how much Marilyn has infected our psyche and our imagination, and also how tragic it is that, as her famous song is, "I want to be loved by you, just you, and nobody else but you." She really wanted to be loved too, and she was loved by millions and didn't feel it and ended her life tragically.
It sounds like a very smart directorial choice not to impersonate Marilyn Monroe. That's Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And in addition, you've made another very interesting choice, a little unconventional, but you have added music. Tell us about that.
Well, there's a lot of opportunity for music in the script, and some places it's specified what tunes to play because it's there's social interactions between this man and this woman, and they're playing music. But to go along with the homage to Marilyn, we have different music than is specifically cited in the text. And we also have original music composed by Luciano Stazzone that accompanies a lot of the fantasy scenes because a big part of this play takes place inside Richard's head. So he's talking to his wife in his head about all the opportunities he's passed up with all the women in his life. He's talking to a voice in his head about what he should do with this girl. Should he go for it or not go for it? Is she going to sue him for blackmail? Is he going to have to get divorced? Is this going to ruin his life? Is she going to want to get married? All of these monologues happen inside his own head, and we see the character circulating inside his mind.
Interesting take. Now, in conjunction with this play, you've scheduled an event at Books and Books, and you've assembled a very interesting panel to talk about all these issues.
Yes, so far we've assembled Dr. Stan DeHart, who's a theater professor. He was actually the teacher who discovered Aaron Glickman as an actor years ago in college. And he has a great personality, very opinionated, but also open to other opinions. We had him on a panel in the past, and a psychiatrist on the panel did not agree with him and actually got him over to her side. So he comes off really strong, but he's open to listening. Also on the panel is a psychologist, Dr. Elsa Orlandini. She specializes in relationships, and also she's a sex therapist. So she can talk to us about the 7-year itch in life today and how does it affect relationships and about fidelity and monogamy and what does that mean today. And then the moderator is Betsy Wise, who has history in law. She was a lawyer. Then she was a stand-up comedian, and now she's a branding and marketing consultant. So she has humor, she has intelligence, she's great at leading an audience and asking questions, and she also has experience in the main character's field.
Now, what's the date of this event at Books and Books? And it is the Coral Gables location,
it's
correct?
It's the Coral Gables location. The panel's on Wednesday, February 25th at 8 p.m., and yes, at the Coral Gables Books and Books.
Last year, you did Hedda Gabler. This year, it's 7-Year Itch. And thematically, they're very similar. It's entrapment in a marriage, a way of life, a job. Are you 2/3 of the way to a trilogy? And if so, what are you going to do for an encore?
That's so interesting because we use the same set for both shows. We've just painted it differently and dressed it differently. Hedda was all white and didn't have any walls. It's just the metal frame and some curtains. And in Itch, we filled in the walls, partly because there are a lot of secret entrances and exits, and also because we wanted to create the feeling of the apartment in New York. And it's all different colors. So I don't want to get rid of that set. And we have been thinking about ways to reconfigure the pieces of the set. And I can't say, I don't want to say what we're thinking of. And I hadn't thought of it as a trilogy, but now I realize it is. There is something we're thinking of that could be considered the third part of the trilogy. So thank you.
Well, that's something for our listeners to look forward to. Stephanie Anson, thank you for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you, Judith.
The 7-Year Itch opens February 19th and runs through March 22nd, with performances Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 8 o'clock and Sunday afternoons at 2. And on April 19th, MTC will host its 10th anniversary gala, featuring Tony Award winner Tanya Pinkins. The Miami Theater Center is located at 9603 Northeast 2nd Avenue in Miami Shores. For more information, log on to mtcmiami.org or telephone 305-751-9550. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
Judith Bishop is a television journalist who has covered breaking news, politics, and the arts for WABC and CNBC. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will return in just a moment.